The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is no substitute for professional care by your doctor or your qualified healthcare professional. Never disregard or delay professional medical advice because of something you've heard on this podcast or in any linked material. Guests who speak on this podcast express their own opinions, experience, and conclusions. Dr. Shirley neither endorses nor opposes any particular opinion discussed on this podcast. The views expressed on this podcast have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, practice, institution, or other entity with which Dr. Shirley may be affiliated.
Welcome to Forever Fab, the podcast on fashion, the art of living, and all things beauty. This podcast is curated by Dr. Shirley Madeer, MD, as the definitive source of holistic wellness through beauty.
You mentioned the post-traumatic growth, and I know we were talking a lot about growing through the pain. Mm-hmm. Is everyone capable of post-traumatic growth? I mean, is that something we all go through and we're just not aware of it? That once we emerge from a traumatic situation, are we growing even though we're not actively doing anything about it?
I think as humans, we're wired to grow as a result of our hardships. Yeah. Are we doing it with intention? No. Do we recognize it? Often, no. Sometimes, do we stop ourselves from it? Yes. Essentially, post-traumatic growth is a theory that explains the kind of transformation that could follow trauma. So it's about cultivating the ability to create a positive or higher level and a healthier mindset than before an incident, right? And so not even trying to get back to who you were before the trauma, but even be a better version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And some people won't allow themselves that. Years ago, I had a friend that died in 9/11, and his wife, who is an acclaimed Broadway actress, whose name I'm not going to say,
of course.
But if she hears it, she's going to know because she know I know her.
Tell her to subscribe and listen.
Okay. I opened People magazine and it was saying she was getting remarried, and it was 5 years after 9/11.
Okay.
And I was angry. How could she get remarried? He just died. She's moving on and rah, rah, rah. I was like ripping her to myself.
Yes.
And God spoke to me. I'm a Christian. I'm sorry for everybody.
No,
but this
apologize.
Might become too much for them.
Not at all.
But I'm not going to convert anybody.
Okay.
But God spoke to me clearly. He said, Charmaine, you are addicted to mourning. And I promised myself one day I would write a book about that. And, you know, mourning things that are dead. Here's somebody who has found a way to come through something tragic and to move on and build her life. And you mad about it.
Yeah.
And I realized that there were things I was holding on to and wasn't allowing myself to move through because I felt like I had to stay in mourning about certain things. I had a conversation about what was possible after my mother died. I'll never have another good birthday because I don't have my mother. My mother made my birthday special. Mm. I'll never have another good birthday.
Wow.
I'll never be able to do this because a lot of things I had said around not having my mother, which meant that certain things in my life wouldn't occur. I have a friend that won't take a cruise because she promised her mother she would cruise with her if she got better. Her mother didn't get better. I'm not going to take a cruise.
Oh,
right? And so when you're addicted to mourning, oftentimes it's hard for you to have the growth past what occurred. You're in a commitment to mourn that. And some things we mourn, you know, when it came to me, like, so I know people when I was a hairstylist that were mourning their high school hair. My hair used to be so full. I used to have so much hair.
My high school
it was
hair.
So long. Yeah. You don't have that hair anymore.
Right.
This
right.
is the hair you have.
That's right.
How are we going to learn to enjoy this hair and even create
yourself,
something
right?
from that? You know, the bodies they had, the relationships they had, you know, high school. Oh my gosh, I have some people still talking about high school.
Wow.
You're 60.
Yeah. Wow.
Can we get off of that?
Take your bed and move on.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that most people with intention, you know, can move forward. But it has to be with intention. Mm. Awareness is the key to everything. When you are open to looking at who you are from a realistic place
that's the hard part.
With grace, right? With grace, if you're willing to look at who you are and willing to take the necessary steps, I think that we can all come out on the other side. When we just have to realize that our brokenness doesn't mean that we're broken. And a lot of people, a lot of people, you know, think that. I say oftentimes, broken crayons still color.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't have to be a super sharp, brand new crayon. It's still going to function down until the very last piece. And it still could create amazing works, just like it did before it was broken. But most people don't realize that. And so when they go through things, they don't think that there's anything else available to them now. And so, you know, when you understand about post-traumatic growth, which most people don't, they only know post-traumatic stress disorder. Right. And if they only have that to look at as the possibilities past their stress,
right,
two things are likely to occur. One is the possibility for growth will not exist, or they'll even maybe think there's something wrong with them. And two, they'll interpret normal responses and reactions to different things that occur, from losing jobs to losing loved ones to exposure to combat and other terrible things.
Yes.
They'll look at the normal process as them having something stress. Extremely wrong. I must have PTSD.
I see.
You know?
Yeah.
And so why I like to talk about post-traumatic growth is so that people know that there is something else available on the other side of trauma.
I love that. That is so important, because you're right. We often hear and only hear about post-traumatic stress, mm-hmm. and obviously post-traumatic stress disorder. And as far as I know, I don't hear many people talking about the other side of that, which is there's a possibility for and an opportunity for growth despite the trauma,
right.
or maybe, you know, because of the trauma.
Yeah, not in spite of, because of.
Because of.
Like, that's where the growth comes in at.
Yep.
Like, you can have actual growth through trauma. It's much like, you know, working out.
You have to go through some pain before you get those muscles.
And physiologically, you break muscles down and then they heal back up and then they're stronger. And what I learned some years ago is if you break a bone in a certain area, you can't break the bone there again. Right. So that area becomes almost unbreakable. Like, you're stronger, per se, in that space than you were before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you concentrate on? The fact that your arm was broken, or when you learn that, okay, it can never get broken there again, then there's a certain empowerment that comes from that, because there's people running around scared to do things because I don't want to break my arm. You can't break it there.
Right, right, right.
Now what?
Yeah.
Now go do something.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the Japanese culture, and I forget the name because I don't speak Japanese, but in the Japanese culture, when ceramics break or when things break, they don't throw it away necessarily. They'll put it back together. But the way that they put it back together is with gold, like a gold glue. It's almost as if they're saying, well, the whole was beautiful, but we're putting this back together. The brokenness of it is even now more beautiful,
right,
because it's got this gold, you know,
isn't that lovely?
Healing it. Isn't that lovely? I'm going to have to look up that concept. Dennis, maybe you'll help me find that, or Fela. So in teaching your clients to live a bold and beautiful life, do you borrow from other practices to incorporate into your sessions?
That's all I do is borrow.
I love that. You obviously borrow from Christianity.
I borrow from everything. There's lots of wisdom out here. There's lots of people who have done the work.
Mm-hmm.
What I am is an avid student. Yeah. Like, it's just ridiculous. I have a lot of people like, Charmaine, if you read another book, stop reading books. And sometimes I do them. I realize that also that's my way of delaying me from doing things too. Mm-hmm. I need to learn more. I need to know more before I do it.
I understand that.
But also, I understand how much has occurred for me when I learn new things.
Yes.
And so there are people out there who have done great work. When I find their work and I feel it transformative to me,
mm-hmm.
I pass it on. I incorporate it in what I do.
Yep.
There's nothing that I've created per se. I put my stank on it, you know, it gets a little Charmaine spin
That's
to
right,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not alone in that.
Right.
I think most stuff is somebody else's iteration mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm good with it. It works. It's powerful.
Yes.
And it keeps me on my toes. Yeah. So I'm a vessel of sorts, I would say.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I do a bit of the same, actually. So when we feel stuck, what are some steps to help turn things around? And I know sometimes, depending on your degree of stuckness, it may require becoming a client of yours. But briefly, if even on a day-to-day basis, if you're thinking, oh man, I don't know how to get out of the situation or what to say to this person, are there some basic steps that we could think to just begin to turn things around and give us a better perspective in that stuckness?
Yeah, I know I sound like a broken record, but you have to sit and think about where your thoughts are leading you. Where the mind goes, the behind follows. Mm-hmm. You cannot think about making your life better and be focused on that and intentional on that and sit around and let your life suck. If you're intentional with it, it's gonna drive you at some point. You'll be crazy if you don't. So I say, you know, most people, I write out my goals periodically.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. I at the beginning of the year, even before the beginning of the year, I set up what I would like to occur for the next year.
Wow.
And there's levels to this game, okay. Right? So there are outrageous goals that I set. Like, yeah. I tell my clients to 3 stages of the goal. Have the outrageous goal. If everything went perfect and you can yeah. have things exactly how you want, make yes. that goal. And then you make a goal somewhere in the middle that might seem more reasonable. And then you make a goal, what's the lowest I'm willing to accept from myself?
Ah.
What's the lowest I'm willing to accept from myself? And then work backwards from that. You know, what do you need to create through that time? And then you work towards it. You chunk it. And in the midst of the whole process, look at what mindset you're holding. Because even if you make goals from a disempowering place, the goals you make from a disempowering place are different than the goals that you make when you're coming from an empowered place.
Right.
So even look at your goals. I tell people, a couple of exercises I do all the time is to have people write down what are the things that have been said to them about themselves from other people.
Ah.
What have people told you? If in the 4 agreements, mm-hmm. I like, he calls it the domestication process. Yes.
Great book.
But yes, it's a wonderful, easy read.
Yeah.
Recommend it. But it's the domestication process, but it also speaks to your narrative. I always have people examine what's the story they tell themselves about themselves, but also what's the story that other people have told you about you?
Yeah.
Right. What does it mean to be you as a girl, mm-hmm. as their child, mm-hmm. as somebody from whatever community you're from, whatever yeah. race you're from,
right.
whatever your sexual orientation is?
Right.
What have people told you about what that means, and what have you agreed to adapt on that? That's not working for you. That doesn't mm-hmm. serve you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, let's look at it. Like, let's get an awareness around everything that you've told yourself that doesn't support you
yeah.
in creating what you want to create.
Yes.
And I often have people write letters to themselves about what they're going to tell themselves when they don't do it. Because what I know is these excuses aren't new.
Right.
Right. We got them waiting there for us. And so when we don't do it, see, and you wasn't going to be able to do it. And you know, you had this going on. And because you got a kid,
right.
I had somebody who dropped out of college. We had our children around the same time. She dropped out of college when she had her child. When I went to undergrad, I was single with no kids. I met right. my husband the first semester.
Yes.
Was married and had a daughter by the time I graduated undergrad.
Wow.
And, you know, not to say I wasn't, you know, crazy every other day,
right.
but I didn't have a story that now that I have a kid, I can't finish
That's
school.
Right.
I'm
right.
not enough. It's going to be too much.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So look up the excuses and stuff that we already have put in place to be a default for when we don't do stuff.
Right.
So once you lay that out in front of you, it becomes garbage. Like, you can't even pretend that you didn't already have a something set up over here to let you not be great.
Right.
Right. So It's all about awareness. Look at what you're saying about yourself. Look at what you've agreed to believe that other people have told you about yourself. Yeah. Look at the excuses that you have already decided that you'll use when you don't create what you want to create.
They're always at the ready.
Right. Be clear on the goals that you're setting, where they come from. Yeah. Be clear on if they're your goals.
Very important.
Right. If these are not other people's goals for you. I'm clear that there are a lot of things I've done and probably things I do now that I'm doing for other people's approval. There are a lot of people in people bondage.
Yes.
And their life is shrouded in trying to make other people happy.
Yes.
And then they wonder why they're not motivated to try and go after some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Or like me, when I did everything I knew my mother wanted me to do, I didn't know what else to do with myself. I spent a lot of years like, this because I lived for, you know, your mother would be so proud of you.
Right.
Oh, your mother would be so proud of you if she knew you did this.
Right.
Or I knew that, it, you know, that she'd wanted it. She always wanted me to go to college. There's not a parent that doesn't.
For right.
Nobody
right.
grows up and like, oh, I want my child to grow up to be a hairstylist. Like, that's not the dream, you know. So my mother really wasn't with that. She was happy when I went to college. She died right before I graduated.
Wow.
But I did it for her.
I
did a lot of things for her. And I did a lot of things. I went to grad school. Not for me per se. I went to make prove to other people I wasn't a stupid little hairstylist, you know, and for the personal edification. I needed to prove to myself that maybe I wasn't just doing this because it was all I could do.
Yeah.
But what else was I doing for other people? Mm-hmm. What else wasn't I doing for other people? There are people whose lives are totally based on other people saying well done, and they're miserable. So, you know, I ask people to look at that, too, when they're making goals. It'll be very easy to understand why you're in ruts and why you're depressed and why you're unhappy when you look at how your life managed to turn into the life that it is. What is it based on? What decisions was it based on?
Right.
Who were you when you were making those decisions?
Yeah, and for whom?
And for whom?
Right. I love what you said about writing out your goals in the three-step process, the most outrageous, the more reasonable, and then particularly what is the lowest standard that you're willing to accept for yourself. Because I'm definitely a list maker, but I just make the list. I make the to-do list, and by I chunk it up into time. By this week, that. By this quarter, that. By the end of the year, that. But I never really look at those to-dos or those goals according to those three categories. So I'm going to revise my categories.
Oh, great. and another to-do list is on who you want to become too. To-do lists don't have to be task oriented. To-do lists can be around the who you want to become. When you look in the mirror, who do you want to see? And I'm not talking, you know, weight. I'm talking from an emotional, psychological, you know, perspective.
On the inside,
Yeah. Who's the person you want to be?
Right.
We want to wake up right and really like be proud and happy of the person that we are.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So on that note, is there a particular mantra that you live by?
Yeah, I can't say it though.
Oh, okay.
I use culturally inappropriate language sometimes.
That's okay.
So I have a North Star that's be the bigger something up.
Yeah.
And I really use that in times where I feel like, you know, people are taking advantage of me or I'm not living up to my potential or, you know, I need grace to abound. Who do you want to be, Charmaine? I want to be the bigger, right?
Bigger badass.
Yeah, we'll use that. But, you know, that's what I use. I have a lot of, I'm the queen of the one-liner. I learned the power of the one-liners and I have a lot that I use for myself. What I will say for your listeners is something I always say is the victory is in the strategy, right?
Yeah.
And so when things are not working out, you want to look at the strategy.
Not necessarily the outcome.
Right. And in terms of outcomes, I have an equation that I use for people in terms of taking responsibility, which is E plus R equals O, which is event plus response equals outcome. And the only thing that, excuse me, is going to get you the outcome you want is how you respond to the events. Events are not changing. They are what they are. You have to figure out who you need to become or get to be in order to have different outcomes in your life.
Right. see.
So, and that's a strategy, right? Yep, so that goes back to the victories and the strategy. Always, if life is not going the way you want to, you have to look at what strategy you're employing.
Yep.
And if it's not working, it's time to figure out a new strategy. And if your strategy is effective and it's still not working, then we got to go back to the mindsets and the inner conversations that you're having and all the latent beliefs that you might have about yourself that you're holding as true that's stopping you.
Very true. Do you have a gratitude practice? And if so, do you invite your clients to do the same? And why is it important to do that?
Gratitude is super important in terms of happiness. I don't have a formal gratitude practice. What I do every morning is get up and say thank you.
Yeah, that's a gratitude practice.
Yeah. And it's and even sometimes I'm like, ooh, I forgot to say thank you. You know, I have a daughter that's about to be 31 next month.
Wow, congratulations.
And thank you.
That's major.
It really is. Major. You know, and what's really major is she's a good girl and I like her.
Oh, it's even more amazing.
Yeah.
That's
you know,
impressive.
I really do. I like her. She makes me crazy. Yeah. I like her. And in the last year, both of us have heard you're lucky to be alive. It's a miracle you're alive. I was in a really bad car accident last July.
Oh, my goodness.
And my daughter just in February had blood clots in her lungs. We both, I was like, wow, Chris, in the last 6 months, we've both heard it's a miracle that you're alive. And while I'm always thankful, I think when you think about your child, the possibilities of my child not being here, like gratitude
takes it to the nth degree. Full tilt to the stratosphere.
Full tilt. It's like, so, while you know some things could occur, You always feel like maybe it won't be you.
Yeah.
And so just like the simple, which is monumental, but like the simple blessing of waking up in the morning and we're okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's where I'm at. And oftentimes my friends get on my, they say I get on their nerves about me always trying to find the bright side and stuff. Oh. But I've lived like a bleak life and I refuse to do that. I have my moments and I sink and God knows I can sink. But I won't let it get the best of me. And I have people that are annoyed by my giddiness. Like I'm really silly in real life. Like
I love that.
I'm really
silly.
So am
I. So, it's kind of hard to, you know, negotiate that with being a surgeon. You can't be a silly surgeon.
Yes, you can. Why not?
I do dance in the operating room. I do.
Yeah. Hello. And I bet you some of your clients would love to just see like full on joy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I would love to know that I have a surgeon who's going in with like joy.
And I do.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. You know, and so I've had people that annoyed by that. I remember people used to be like, when are you going to grow up? And I'm like, grow up. I got a business, a kid, a house. Right. My grandparents lived with me for more than a decade.
You're
I took
plenty
care
grown.
Of them. I did this. Like, but they were like, when are you going to stop being silly? I'm not.
Right.
And I'm in a commitment to be silly.
Right.
I'm in a commitment because it got me through. And I realized the power. Yeah. It's so much power in just allowing yourself to be grateful and be happy, even in moments that suck. Yeah. I have friends, we could be arguing. One of my best friends, we yell at each other in a way that startles people, but then she'll say something stupid and then we just buzz out laughing and then we move on.
Yes.
And my daughter hates that. Like, I'll be like, all right, you want to go shopping? Not now. Like, because we were just mad at each other. Look, that was then we were mad. This is a new moment. Can we just like go out and have fun?
I love that. Yeah. That's impressive.
Like, whatever. I'm going without you because that moment is over.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When I have a cousin who, the NYPD had brought me in to talk to their police officers around domestic violence victims and just trying to give them insight into them because they're not always nice to them.
Understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a cousin who's extremely intelligent and I gave her my speech. I'm like, read this over for me. And she read it and she was like, I never knew any of this about you.
Wow.
And meanwhile, you know, I get on her because she complains about little. My mother read my diary. I'm like, girl, right? you know.
Okay.
And she's like, I never knew any of this about you. And this is like 5 years ago. And I said, I know. Because when I was with you, I wasn't in that. Like, that's why would I stay in that over here? I'm over here. This is time to have fun, to do whatever. I'm going back to whatever that is. So I've learned how to compartmentalize my moments and how not to let what's happening there bleed into my present. The present is this. And I will not allow it to ruin this moment. What occurred in that moment. And so I'm pretty good at letting stuff go. And it's not that it's gone forever. You know, it still might come back and have my moments. But if I'm in this moment and this moment is like amazing and beautiful and even just regular, why would I allow myself to be overtaken and still allow this moment to bleed into it? And that's something that people need to realize too. And that comes to that addicted to mourning thing. You know, are you just going to continue to lament over things that are dead? Even moments that are dead, they're over.
I think it's about compartmentalization. I think it's really important to emphasize what you just said, is that you can compartmentalize, and you're doing yourself a favor by not letting what happened in the past or some moment ago negatively impact your present moment. But at the same time, you're doing a disservice to yourself and others if you're thinking you're compartmentalizing, but you're still bringing the emotion of what was past to the present moment.
Bitter Betty. Here she come.
Or you're staying in victim mode.
And guess what? People don't want to be bothered with that. I learned it very early. I don't care how much pain you're in. Most people, they really don't want to be bothered with your pain. I remember after my mother died. And if you set yourself up in a certain way to be a certain person, if you're the depressed person, then okay, you know. But if you're not that person, if you set yourself up a certain way, people are really unwilling to have to deal with another person. And I've been told that, like, enough. Like, okay, your mother died. We get it. Enough. And you have to figure yourself out around that. And you also have to understand some people, everybody's looking to feel special and significant. And some people... its way of being special is significant is to have the biggest problems. And so
that's how they get attention. That's how they get sympathy, empathy, compassion.
That's how they get love. That's how everything. So you have to be clear on if that's your strategy for getting attention and for having meaning. Like, your meaning is, I'm the one who lost their mother. I'm the one who, you know, doesn't have a man. I'm the one who can't lose weight. Whatever it is, if that, you have to figure out if the thing that you hold on to make you feel special and significant with other people is your pain and your struggles and your problems. Because if that's the case, it's always going to be prevalent and you'll never move forward, because that is the only thing you feel that you have.
Love it. I can't believe we're down to the last few questions. I could talk to you forever. Maybe I'll just have to become your client. So if you could invent something to heal the world, what would that one thing be?
I think it would be a big grace machine. I think that most people's pain comes from them being too hard on themselves and hard on other people. And so I think forgiveness and grace kind of go hand in hand. And if I could find a way for, like, to make everybody just allow themselves some grace, I think the world would be a different place.
I would agree with you on that. Complete this sentence. I am.
One word or more words?
Whatever you'd like.
I am grown, but still a child. I always say I am a study in contrast.
I feel that.
Like, you know, I am super mature and really immature. And I am a designer girl in a dirty backpack world. I love house music, but I also love, like, classical and jazz. So... in total, I feel like I am a study in contrast.
A beautiful enigma.
Perfect.
What is the most significant thing you've learned in two parts? What's the most significant thing you've learned from someone else? And then the second part is, what's the most significant thing you've learned about yourself? So from someone else.
The same message from a lot of people, that I am more than I realize. Everything most major things I've done, other people suggested them to me.
So you've been quite open to
yes,
the good stuff.
I'm a yes to most things. And I don't know if that's because I'm too stupid to say no.
I would doubt that.
Or, yeah, but I went to grad school because a client was like, I'm getting my MBA. You should think about going to school.
Okay, school. Done.
And one of my clients was sent to her job center to train for a coach. She said, I found what you're supposed to be doing. You should go look into that. I didn't even know what a life coach was back then. That was more than a decade ago. I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot.
Yep.
But even being invited to teach, it was a professor, you should teach. I'm like, yeah. Right? So what I've learned about myself is that I don't see who I am. And I'm thankful that other people see me and are willing to speak to me about it and support me.
Yeah.
What I've learned for myself is I am enough.
Critical.
Even in the moments where it doesn't look like it and I don't show up as my greatest self.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go through it, but I'm enough. Like, I'm enough to get through all the things I do that don't serve myself, all the things that occur and happen to me. Like, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be more than all right.
Yeah.
And it's not a mistake that I've been able to come through what I've come through
right.
already. It's not happenstance. Like, I did that.
That's right. That's right. And you were meant to show the world that it's possible.
Listen, I'm clear that, you know, God only put me through what I went through so that I could stand and be a sign of the possible. I'm telling you, my thing is
an example of the possible.
I am. That is my purpose in life, to show possibility, period.
I love it. So, our last question.
Mm.
What are your top five recommendations for living a graceful, fabulous, and beautiful life? Your top five.
I have five. I wrote them down. Forgiveness.
Forgive others.
Is one. And not forgive others, forgiveness, period. Because the person we generally have to forgive the most is ourselves.
Yep, forgiveness.
So forgiveness is big. Thinking intentionally. Self-care.
Yes.
And women are infamous for not engaging in this practice. Self-care is important. I can't stress it enough. Grace. Giving yourself permission to be human. Mm-hmm. And have fun.
I love it. Forgiveness, think intentionally, practice self-care, live with grace, give yourself permission to be human, and have fun.
Yes.
Fantastic. My God, Charmaine, I took so many notes. I felt like I was in class. This was absolutely amazing.
Thank
absolutely
you for having
amazing
me.
And thank you for saying yes. You said you were a yes person. Thank you for saying yes to
yeah.
this podcast. I'm absolutely honored that you said yes. And I'm really not only impressed, but deeply moved by what you said. So thank you for that. So you've been listening to the interview with Charmaine Jenkins on the power of positive psychology, how to boldly go where you were meant to go. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Forever Fab. Until next time, stay beautiful inside and out. And if you'd like more information about Charmaine or to become a client, please go to, and correct me if this is wrong.
To my Instagram. I'm getting ready to take my website down.
Website coming down, so go to her Instagram.
Yeah, and that would be manifest_coach.
manifest_coach.
Yeah. And Facebook is manifest.coach.
And on Facebook, yeah. If you're a Facebook person, it's manifest.coach.
I'm never on my Twitter. Never.
So there it is, folks. Stay
yes.
positive, stay beautiful, and see you next time, or hear you next time. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Forever Fab, the podcast on fashion, the art of living, and all things beauty, curated by Dr. Shirley Madeer, MD. Live beautifully and help make the world a more beautiful place.